Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Some of you may be interested in my Wednesday night television show where web video meets the issues. Tonight's videos include an interactive map of where you can afford to live in New York City. That's tonight at 7:30 on CUNY TV, Channel 75, on the New York City cable systems. Well, we will get more reaction now to the Senate's reported health care deal, which would enable Americans 55 and over to buy into Medicare and set up a private, not-for-profit insurance option for others to compete with the corporate plans. Here is Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid last night.
This is a consensus that will help ensure the American people win in a couple of different ways. One, insurance companies will certainly have more competition. And two, the American people will certainly have more choices.
So we'll get the take now of someone who has just written a book on the transformation of primary care in America. And we'll open the phones now, as I said before the break, for primary care physicians and for nurses and others who consider yourselves primary care health providers, 212-433-WNYC. I wonder if you agree with the American Medical Association, which is initially skeptical of this plan because they don't like the low reimbursement rates that Medicare provides compared to private insurers. 212-433-9692 for primary care physicians, nurses, others who are primary care health providers, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Timothy Hoff is policy professor at the SUNY Albany School of Public Health. Dr. Hoff, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And the book is called Practice Under Pressure, Primary Care Physicians and Their Medicine in the 21st Century. And before we get to the new wrinkles in the healthcare debate, by way of context, your book portrays primary care as going through a profound change in the United States. What has it been changing from and changing to?
Well, it's really been changing for a couple of decades now, and we're at the point where it's about to go through, I think, sort of one of its last final great evolutions before it may indeed become something else. You know, the primary care that a lot of us grew up with was, you know, having the one doctor that we all went to. We still do that as children very often with pediatricians. But we all had that one doctor who sort of decided what kind of care we should get, when we should go to the specialist, when we shouldn't, what tests we needed. That person knew us. That person had relationships with us and our family. That person visited us in the hospital. That person might have done simple procedures on us. And we've really moved to a system now where we have a primary care mode of delivery that's really more transactional. You know, the relational elements have sort of faded away slowly but surely. You know, we may not see the same doctor now when we visit a primary care setting that we saw the last time we came in. Those doctors most likely will not visit us when we're in the hospital anymore. We'll be taking care of these people called hospitalists will take care of us now. And so the scope of work that primary care doctors do and the relationships that we were used to growing up that they built up with us, those things have sort of faded away.
And you're right about differences in attitudes toward their work by older and younger primary care physicians. Are people going into this field of medicine for different reasons or with different expectations than their parents' generation of primary care physicians?
Well, I think the research would say yes, and certainly the book would say yes, and enough anecdotes would say yes. You know, the one thing that surveys and research and even my book points out now is that people going into medical school want not only to earn a good living and to be stimulated by the practice of medicine, they want lifestyle. They want to be able to not have an all-consuming career, but also be able to go home and have clear boundaries between their work lives and their non-work lives. And the people going into primary care, I think, and they talked about this in the book, really focus on, you know, what they like about primary care in terms of its ability to give them a life, to have medicine be a really good job, but not an all-consuming endeavor.
Let's take a phone call, and there's a lot more of this that we'll get into, including the relative income that primary care physicians make compared to radiologists and dermatologists and people like that. But let's take a phone call. Mario in Bed-Stuy, you're on WNYC. Mario, thank you for calling.
Thank you, Ryan, for taking my call. I'd like to know one question. Why does the state take so many subgroups and give them names, managed care companies, and give them $15,000 per patient per year, and the primary care physician is earning between $7 per patient to $27 per patient per month, and the cost of living has gone up, malpractice is up, and for the past 15, 20 years, it's been like this, and it's okay. I just cannot understand why they cannot have just one group controlling that set of money so that we can get better reimbursement and use the same system they are using.
Timothy Hoff, is this a story and a question that you have heard repeatedly?
Well, the caller is actually referring to sort of two things that are a little bit separate in some ways. One is sort of when managed care first started in the 1990s, you know, a lot of the financing moved into what was called capitation, which meant that primary care doctors, for example, would get paid a fixed amount for each person they cared for per month. And they would be responsible for all the care provided within that fixed dollar amount. If they provided more care than that dollar amount provided, they lost money. If they provide care that didn't meet that dollar amount, they got to keep that money. That system has sort of gone away a little bit, and doctors in primary care are still paid fee for service now, you know, which means they provide a service, they get paid for it. But the question is, you know, as primary care doctors will tell you, they feel the payments are extremely low for what they do. The other issue that the caller brings up is really around, you know, the whole competitive marketplace. We have a system of healthcare in this country that largely relies upon a lot of insurance plans, even for providing public care like Medicaid, providing that care. And I think the question is, you know, could it be better provided by having, you know, one source of payment, whether it's a single payer system or one entity that sort of made those sort of funding decisions.
Here is Avi in Manhattan. Avi is a consultant to doctors on how they should manage their office. Is that right, Avi?
Yes. I give advice. I'm retired. I work with a billing company. And Medicare, allowing people 55 on Medicare, that's the simplest system that we have. It's fast. It's efficient. Medicare follows the rules. If a patient needs to see a specialist, they don't need permission. They can just go. It's taken care of. No authorizations. If people were worried in the past about these death squads, well, what happens when Aetna or Oxford says, you can't go to the specialist? You know, they keep doctors out of their network for financial reasons.
It's a great question. And Timothy Hoff, I wonder how you think primary care physicians would react in general to this idea of extending Medicare down to age 55 if the 55 to 64-year-olds are otherwise uninsured and want to buy in. In a way, Medicare bypasses the necessity of the primary care physician for the exact reason that Avi was just describing. They're not required, like they are by many private insurance plans, to be the gatekeepers.
That's true, and I think many primary care physicians, you could probably say, are not big fans of the present Medicare system. You could say that about other groups of doctors, too. One, because Medicare reimbursements traditionally have been kept lower than reimbursements, for example, for primary care services that a primary care doctor can get through a private insurance plan, because the government sets those rates. And you either, with Medicare, you either have to participate or you can't sort of be involved at all. And so I think that's been a source of disgruntlement for primary care doctors. So it's sort of a wait and see to see if the idea is to bring Medicare back to people who are 55 who can't get insurance. I think part of the skepticism maybe among doctors and certainly primary care doctors who feel for a long time their services have been undervalued by the government and through Medicare. The wait and see is what sort of reimbursement protections are going to be given to primary care doctors in all this. And then the other issue you raise, which is spot on, is, you know, in Medicare, you really don't have to utilize a primary care doctor in the way that primary care doctors would probably like to be utilized.
Should you have to, in your opinion?
There's a good case to be made that if you want to keep costs down in the system and you want to focus on things like prevention and taking care of people when they're healthy before they get sick, you know, and that's not the system we really have right now.
There's a paradox there, isn't there? And kind of the two extremes, I think, of being a primary care physician, which is, on the one hand, we definitely want to emphasize prevention. We want to reimburse it well. We want to, you know, encourage the relationship that a primary care physician has with the patient as an individual, as a human being. On the other extreme, you have the HMO system, which is being rejected now more and more, which was that the primary care provider was the only person who could approve a referral to a specialist, and with the insurance company looking over the doctor's shoulder.
Yeah, and that, you know, it is sort of the sort of schizophrenic nature of healthcare and how we think about it in this country. You know, we went through a lot of these ideas in the 90s about trying to put primary care back at the center of healthcare, having someone like a primary care doctor who could coordinate your care, who could make, you know, the best decisions in consultation with you about what to do for your healthcare. And the public sort of rejected that. And they rejected it in part because of, I think, the perception that they didn't want to have their choice restricted. They wanted to be able to see the doctors they wanted to see. And so now we're debating whether we should come back to that model. And I think for primary care doctors, they're going to want to see reimbursement, not like it was under managed care, where they got paid ahead of time for you know, providing the care and gatekeeping, but more of a fee-for-service system where they can still earn money for services they provide.
Timothy Hoff, policy professor at the Public Health School at the State University at Albany, author of Practice Under Pressure, Primary Care Physicians and Their Medicine in the 21st Century. And Jessica in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for having me. I love your show.
Thank you.
A couple of things I just wanted to say that I think there are a couple of discussions going on. One is that we have to separate out the health insurance conversation from the health care conversation. All this talk about how everyone's going to be insured is wonderful, but there's no value added to health care from Aetna and Oxford and Cigna. What they do for me as a solo primary care physician is add on layers and layers of paperwork and time-consuming rules that take away from my ability to spend time with my patients.
Jessica, do you accept Medicare?
I do.
And would you rather see more of your patients age 55 to 65 now under this reported plan covered by Medicare?
Absolutely. And I also think the conversation about reimbursement has to be separated out from the concept of a Medicare-type system. We can talk about poor reimbursement rates and negotiate better rates, but the concept of having a single payer, one piece of paper, I see my patients, I spend time with them, I check off what I do, I submit one piece of paper and I get paid. That's all I want to do. The time-consuming distractions from the multiple layers of insurance, different insurance companies, is just a horrible way to practice.
Jessica.
And I don't like the reimbursement either. We can talk about that.
Uh-huh.
But the ease of Medicare is wonderful.
Would a lot of primary care physicians agree with her, do you think, Timothy Hoff?
Well, certainly the billing aspect is easier than, you know, having to deal with 7-8 private insurance plans in your practice. But, you know, the reimbursement has been an issue for a lot of primary care physicians in terms of getting, you know, lower rates through Medicare or not getting reimbursed for the types of services they feel they want to provide. But, you know, that happens with private insurance plans too. I mean, the whole notion that primary care is essentially becoming a set of services that is increasingly devalued by insurance plans and by even the government in terms of the reimbursement, I think, goes across the board. And so we'll see if health reform can start to reverse that a little bit.
Can it? Do you think the government can do something? Because I hear this from members of Congress who come on this show in theory, but I don't know that it's there in writing in any of these bills. Can the government do something? Is anything on the table to get primary care reimbursed to reflect its real medical value to the patient, compared to, say, dermatology or radiology or whatever in which you can make so much money?
Well, you know, I guess I'm a little skeptical because we're talking right now about a zero-sum pie, right? You know, the health reform options on the table are either going to be budget neutral or budget saving over time. And so, you know, if you take money from somewhere and give it to primary care doctors, you're going to have to take it away from someone else. And I think that would be an extended process of debate as to, you know, which doctors or which other specialties might lose out. So I think, you know, both the House and the Senate versions of their bills have things in them to try and enhance, for example, Medicaid reimbursement, you know, bringing Medicaid reimbursement for primary care services up to the same par as Medicare, what Medicare currently pays now. In my opinion, though, both bills are fairly silent on, you know, the whole primary care reimbursement issue. And, you know, within all this is the larger issue of, you know, we're going to have a plan that over the next 10 years may provide 35 million people in this country more health insurance. We will not have have the primary care doctors or system available to take care of those patients. We see this in Massachusetts, right? Massachusetts enacted a health care reform. They can claim that 97% of their population is covered. However, there are big differences in access to care for the different groups that are insured. Emergency room use, a study came out this summer, still shows that emergency room use among patients in Massachusetts is still as high as ever. And so we can provide insurance to people, but if we don't have a primary care system and primary care providers in enough quantity, we're going to be in big trouble.
Would simply more spots and more medical schools solve that problem?
I don't think it would, because, you know, and certainly my book really goes into this. You know, the culture of medicine is not really favored towards primary care right now. I mean, I think you'd have to see a fundamental shift, not only in reimbursement, but in how medical training thinks about primary care, how they get young medical students and young medical residents to get interested in primary care. And you could argue right now it's a training system that is very much geared towards producing specialists and not primary care doctors.
The book is called Practice Under Pressure, Primary Care Physicians and Their Medicine in the 21st Century. The author is Timothy Hoff, who teaches at the School of Public Health at the University of Albany. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, flying cars and other things that were supposed to happen by the 21st century but haven't. Stay with us.